Hi, this is Helen, and thank you for joining me for a cup of teal. Teal is shorthand for the future of work. It means bringing your whole self to work, a focus on purpose and self-management. And this podcast is a chat over a cup of tea with the people who are making this happen in health, care, and public services. Stories of self-management in action. What difference does it make to the executive team when an organisation commits to move towards self-management? Rosie Lawn, CEO from Avivo, talks eloquently about the difference it's made to her role and the difference it's made to the executive team and how they now think differently, for example, about risk. So I hope you enjoy my conversation with Rosie Lawn from Avivo.
I think one of the things I've been really reflecting on has been how our journey, Avivo, is quite different from organisations that start afresh. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting reflecting on that. So I think I was quite naive in some ways in the beginning around what it would take for a very established organisation to transform itself to support the autonomy of teams and our customers into the future. So that's where my head is at the moment, Helen. I'm a bit like, when you ask me questions like where we're at now, I have very complicated answers because we're an organization of 1,100 employees who support 3,000 people every year. Everything, everywhere, there's examples of teams who are working with customers and supporting them to live life amazingly and with an incredibly high level of functioning coming from team members to other teams who are just struggling and then other places within Avivo where we haven't even transitioned yet. So with Avivo, with the transformation, I think I said to you in the last podcast, we're on the way. We're quite a long way along the journey, but we've still got a really long way to go.
So for the teams that you've mentioned that you think are doing well, however we define well, what do they look like and how are they different from how more traditional teams are working in Avivo?
The teams that are doing really well will look like excited, purposeful. They come together, they solve problems, but they think ahead. They're very connected to their communities. They are working really regeneratively, if you want to use that word, about possibility. So they're like that, a person that's really whole and well and doing great work. They're respectful of each other, but they're actually diverse too. So quite often I'm thinking of teams, they are functional, you know, that's the sort of a team that's doing really well. So I can think of examples of teams like that. And it's one of the big things for me at the moment. What is it taking for those teams to get there? And what does it take for the organisation to support that level of development in them to get to that place?
Those are great questions. And in the conversations I've been having with organisations like yours that want to make a transformation as opposed to wellbeing teams setting up from the beginning, there seems to be a spectrum of some examples of organisations who have been supported to think, now you're a self-managing team, you work out how you want to self-manage. So there's one school of thought that's very much there, right over to the other school of thought, which is more around holacracy or sociocracy that says, here's how you can self-manage. So where along that spectrum would you say you have supported teams to be?
I see a team having the capability to self-manage is a really core component to working really effectively with people in communities. Mm-hmm. But it's not the only thing.
No, of course, absolutely. So what else would you say is as important as self-management in the different ingredients that enables that to happen?
I think it is about a group of people coming together around a shared purpose, actually making it their own, and then working together to be able to make that purpose a reality. of course, to me, another way talks about that, that brings in a lot of the principles of self-management, but self-management is like a component of it that helps them to really organize themselves. It's not the end in itself. So I think it's more important to think about the people they're there to work for. So, you know, like self-management, you can get very consumed in the team functioning. And the team functioning, of course, really helps us get to a particular end. But it is really about what are we really committed to and excited about how we're going to support these people to live in their communities. That's, I think, is the critical thing for them to think about what will make a difference for people to live life in community. Do you see what I'm saying?
Completely. And I think the challenge in the UK for many organisations that I've been working with is because we've had a focus on person-centred practices and personalisation, etc., that people think, yes, we've done that, or we know that's really, really important, but we've not been able to make that happen as much as we really wanted to. And you were really articulate about this in our first podcast, that actually, if you're looking for an organizational structure or a team structure to deliver the greatest possibilities of a good life with and for somebody with a learning disability, that you'd naturally gravitate to more autonomy at a team level.
I think our work in human services, learning disability, elderly people, is about supporting people to live their lives and develop their capability. And therefore, I think if we're going to work effectively to do that as team members working closely with them, we need to have that capability ourselves. So it's like developing capability and self-management amongst teams to be able to support the people we work for to develop capability and to be able to lead their own lives and make their own decisions. Yeah, so going back to your question around the continuum, I think we made some very big mistakes early on about, okay, you're a self-managing team, and not spending enough time on that team working to develop their own sense of purpose and not working closely enough with them to help develop their capability to work effectively as a team. And also, and then a recent aha thing has been to really think about the community they're working in and how they're part of it, not on it. So I don't necessarily think it's been, I think we probably did too much. Okay, you're a self-managing team, off you go, you get on with it. And we really learned heaps that we needed to provide more support to people.
Thank you for being that honest. And it is something that I'm seeing in other places as well, where our excitement around self-management and this being a new way of working can lead to us underestimating the support for people to transition into that way of working if their previous experience has been, you know, very manager driven. So if you were starting again, for example, what else would you be putting in place to address the challenge you've just described?
Well, what we have learned is that teams need coaching. and we are doing that now. This is what we've been doing a whole lot more over the last year, is that as a team forms, we've been supporting their development. You probably say it's a little bit more like they undertake a development program. It's not just like starting at the coaching end. It's really a piece of work where they develop their understanding and capacity to work as a team. We are exploring at the moment too about what we do to support that team to really focus, to connect and be part of their community and identify with their community. So intentionally doing that. So I think that coaching part has been really important, and that foundational work and that coaching work to really work out how they're going to work together. And then having some support ongoing to be able to work through issues as and when they need it.
It's so good to hear you saying that, because I think as so many of us are impressed and inspired by Buurtzorg and their model being a coaching model, it's easy to think that that's the only solution. But like you, I think there's quite a significant development program to enable people to think differently and behave differently, as well as coaching as you need it when you come up with problems. So what's the contents of your development program? What kind of things feature in that?
It is actually some of those notions about why work in a team, why work in a neighbourhood. So it's the why of neighbourhood teams, really. That's one of the parts, and really exploring that together. And to think about the development program also has a component of the journey that they might go through. So it's like selecting into the team, forming, developing their capability to work together, but then also changing as they grow. There's work on why the different roles within the team. So early on, there were sort of some clear roles that became clearer that the teams needed for their functioning, supporting different members to think about taking on those roles and then supporting them to take that forward. The development program also includes some work around conflict resolution and dealing with challenges. We also provide them with things around resources within the organisation and where they can get help around different things, a whole range of things. So that's some of the things in the development program. There is a process of going through, but there's also, we do meet teams about where they're at. I recently heard one of the coaches meeting last week, the team in the development phase, and they really had lots of conflict going on. So that really needed to be fast-tracked and moved along, and there was a lot of fallout associated with that and follow-up, whereas another team, the conflict would only emerge a bit later along their journey.
And if people are thinking, well, that's great, that sounds like a two-day training course we can put everybody on and off we go, what would you say to that?
If only, hey? Yes. I would say that they need practice together to work with the team. So it's a bit like you can do the two-day, but then it's the work that happens all in between that provides all the opportunity for the application of learning and actually really seeing how each person shows up and how it really works together. We tend to take it, trying to get people together, we guide them that, you know, they do meet every couple of weeks on a regular basis for the first 7 to 8 fortnights. So it goes over that period. We can do that really easily in the city. And that gets plenty of material for people to work on and follow up some, you know, so they're like, they can reflect and bring other things back into the sessions again. It's not so possible, you know, anything about Western Australia, you know, the enormous distances.
Of course, yes.
So we've been seeing teams in country areas where we're actually, the coaches are actually going out together. They might be two coaches and they actually spend more like a longer session and then follow up. So we're having to think about how we format that a little bit differently. We also are following up using some Zoom calls or using Microsoft Teams to be able to have some teams connect in more regularly with a coach or with a subject matter expert to be able to assist them with different parts of it. So I think it takes time. It isn't just doing a course. It's the work that you're learning about both yourself and your team over time that is really important.
I think that's such a significant message that people shouldn't think it's about sending people on a short course, whether that's 2 days or 4 days. It's a different way of showing up together, isn't it? And working together, and it needs time to support and embed that.
That's right. It's the learning on the job and then having a space to talk about it and reflect along with what the coach can provide with guidance, that's really important.
And you've mentioned Microsoft Teams, and we're seeing how critical it is to either have Microsoft Teams or Slack so that teams can communicate continuously and in a very, very different way than you would have either with phone calls or with emails. How significant has that been for you?
I hear the coaches saying that a lot of the teams are really utilising Microsoft Teams very, very well. It doesn't replace, you know, technology is an enabler, but when a team is really using it, it can really help with the communications and all, it can be very helpful. It would be actually really useful for you to have probably a session more with the coaches who are really close to the work, but they tell me about things, how you can see qualitative changes when teams start shifting into another place by their type of conversation and the quality of their connection on Teams.
Lovely. I would love to have a podcast with one of your coaches. That would be amazing. And what kind of span do you have of coaches to teams?
We have 5 coaches at the moment, and we have currently around about 60 teams who are all at different stages in their development. There are some teams who are having minimal contact with coaches through to others where there's enormous energy going into. So if you take the crude thing of 5 to 60, it's only about 1 to 11, isn't it? We will probably get to a stage where we're more like we anticipate with Aviva. We're about halfway through. We probably would equivalency at least in the same number of teams by this time next year. And we need those current coaches to be able to do all the development work with the other 60 and also to continue to support the current teams. Will we need more coaches? I don't know yet. And I would actually probably have to say with Avivo, that we've got the coaches, but we actually still do have coordinators, which was a decision. Did I mention it last time? We decided the coordinators in our current system of service delivery needed to continue to be able to keep the wheels on while we made the transition to the neighbourhood teams and the coaches.
So can you explain the different roles between a coordinator and a coach?
A coach has got a primary focus really on supporting the team with their development, which is in the context of providing great support to people to live life in the community. But it is very much been on that foundations of creating and forming team and working effectively together. The coordinators have got a responsibility to be able to support excellent service delivery. So they guide the customer journey still across the organisation and work and partner with the teams and the coaches. I think in hindsight, we could have done that a lot better because I think it could have been done a lot more in partnership with the coordinators. For whatever reasons, I think there's lots of assumptions we didn't involve the coordinators as well as we could have. We're now seeing that if we really partner with coordinators and you develop a really good relationship between the teams and the coordinators and the coach, that's really effective both with the transition and supporting really excellent provision of supports and services to people.
So were the coordinators an existing role within Avivo before you made
yes.
this transition?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah, they're not. So that's been our big challenge, but we needed to keep organisation providing the services that, you know, and we made the decision to keep coordinators in the positions at the same time as transforming with the coaches and the neighbourhood teams. So I suppose the difference I've seen with the coordinators, they're still focused primarily on, they've got responsibility for ensuring that our customers get good services.
That's really interesting learning because we've been testing out two models. One where we have a wellbeing leader who's responsible for both the experience of team members and therefore would be a self-management coach and has overall quality responsibility to our regulators, CQC. And in our new teams that are starting working with people with personal budgets, we're exploring separating those roles. So we've got somebody who's responsible for recruitment right through to self-management and somebody who's responsible for the experience of the people we support. So it's interesting learning, isn't it?
Yeah. We're at the stage where as we go along, we're really needing to think more around the roles that support good services or good support for people to live life and support the neighbourhood teams. And I think that means some change for the coordination roles.
And where have the coaches come from? Are they people who were already working in your organisation? How have you recruited new people?
They are. We started looking at investing in coaching quite a few years ago. So we actually already had some people who had been on international credentialed kind of coaching courses. But we also, when we got the coaches, we advertised internally and I think we have externally. I'm really pleased we ended up recruiting a lot. The five people have all come from internal. They all needed to have what we the term in the selection criteria was the potential to work as a coach. And we did quite a lot of work to try through workshops and that sort of thing involving support workers and other colleagues for the selection of the coaches. So we did actually took a bit of a, you know, some of those things I think I've learned from you as well about different scenarios, activities, a whole selection process to help inform the decision-making around this, you know, the particular coach's capability for be able to work in that way. It's interesting, actually, the coaches are diverse, but quite a number of them have been working with people actually in the mental health space. Thought a lot around developing capacity and recovery in people. If you want to work in a really person-centered or recovery way and you do that with customers, that makes you perfect. Lots of amazing experience to bring into coaching teams.
Oh, that's a great way of thinking about it. Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. So they've been all internal. They're a pretty extraordinary group of people. And they are, you know, they're very busy with working with their neighbourhood teams, but they also provide support to back office teams who are gone down the track of developing their capability to self-manage and be more autonomous as well. So that's really positive. I've just come from a session this afternoon. The exec team is being coached by one of the team coaches, and she does an amazing job with us as well. We don't need a coach all the time, but at the moment we're doing some capability work, and it's been very helpful to have someone help us think and move to another level.
That sounds great to have one of your existing coaches working with the executive team. And I know that some of the executive teams that I've been talking to recently would want to ask you, what difference have you seen in the way that your executive team thinks about their role and how they operate in practice?
That's actually been really exciting for us. I would say, you asked me to reflect on my own role. I think my role has really changed in the last couple of years. And it's because I actually really feel it's not like the CEO who heads up the executive team. I feel like we're a team where we're all part of it as equals. We're quite a small executive team. We currently have three executives and one executive assistant sitting in the team. And I actually have a great sense now that I've got people around me, rather than that feeling like I always thought I had the support of the executive, but now I really feel I'm part of, and we're developing and taking responsibility together, which I really love. We really realise that we have a shared sense of purpose about developing the capability of people within the organisation and supporting their performance. It sounds really simple, but now we really own it. You know, it's like, yes. And we're supporting each other, like how we're working together to really support individuals, support teams, but also ensure accountability. It's very exciting. I'm not saying we're doing it beautifully, but it feels a lot different from what I think about with Avivo, say, 2 years ago, or even 18 months ago. It has really changed. It's meant a lot of change, I think, for each of us. It's a lot of personal growth in the way we work together. I know that I've had to do a lot of work. I think I've been prepared to do that about how I share power, how I can't be the one that always comes up with the brightest solution, that I can't have it Rosie's way. It doesn't mean to say that I'm giving away responsibility, but I've had to learn a lot about how I share responsibility. And we also really take very seriously to how we really support and steward the whole cultural environment of Avivo and sensing the whole of the organisation. So it's a really good place to be. Not always easy. You know, it's like I can actually see how you can make something work when it's that whole vision of a really healthy, effective team together, and that we're really demonstrating all the values and the beliefs around these kinds of organisations within us as a team, how we can have such an enormous impact on the organisation.
So as an executive team, you're modelling the way you want to be together, the sharing of responsibility, the no one person is responsible for all the bright ideas approach. So if I was a fly on the wall, Rosie, in one of your executive team meetings 2.5 years ago and today, what kind of difference would I see in how you operate in, for example, your meetings or how you are together?
A couple of years ago, you would have seen Rosie talking quite a lot and a couple of other people talking a lot, but then other people not talking at all. You would have seen a much larger team. They were kind of nice conversations, but there would have been a subtext, there's another conversation going outside of the room. I do believe now that we see there's a lot of honest conversations in the room. You see everybody talking, but we're actually a smaller group. I see people reflecting and then actually taking ownership for reflecting and sharing their reflections to the group. I see a really high level of engagement.
That's wonderful. And when you mentioned conversations, would they be more courageous conversations?
Really
hard.
Much more courageous. Yes. It is hard. And all that goes, and it's interesting, isn't it? And it is like over these years, you develop practices. It doesn't come overnight.
And what kind of practices have you found useful?
Well, over the time, I think we did start with things like check-ins. We still do that, about getting people to bring themselves into the room, and also check-outs and being honest about those, not just, you know, oh, I'm fine, you know, and it's not just a game, but really honestly doing that. Practice that's been very helpful for our executive team, but actually that immunity to change work.
Yes, you know, yes.
So actually each of us individually doing the work about what's the thing we always take, what are the assumptions we hold, and we tend to bring that assumption to every piece of work and can often show up as a strength, but it's also one of our limitations. So that's a practice that all of us in the executive team have done, and in a number of our other leadership teams, which has been really good. And we have a practice with an exec of having a regular pulse meeting every week. And then we have a grow session on a monthly basis. So pulse is much more of a check-in, following through on the, you know, things that are going on. But actually one of the exciting things we've ended up doing lately around pulse is a practice of saying we're reflecting in pulse also. If our main purpose is to develop the capability of people and teams within the organization, then that's actually what we need to check in on the pulse. Whereas previously it was all about tasks and things we were worrying about. We need to still do that, but actually we've got to check in on our pulse, in our pulse being around our most important thing, which is about developing capability and accountability. The grow sessions are more intentional, and often we'll take a piece of work or thinking that we will, one of us might lead it and explore, and we have a really in-depth conversation. So we've done things, some of the stuff over the time around like immunity to change or self-management, innovation. Currently we're doing a lot of work with Carol Sanford with Regenerative Organisations, and we're working with that in our grow sessions with some other colleagues as well.
I was working, as I said, this week with an executive team, and I've got what I call the sort of no-grow spectrum. So from how well we know each other as individuals to are we actively growing and developing through the work, and you'll know that comes from the deliberately developmental organisations. So on that end of the spectrum is the immunity to change map, and on the other end of the spectrum it's stuff like one-page profiles. So to hear an executive team actively working in the kind of way you've described around immunity to change maps is incredible.
Yeah, it has. And I do feel like we talk about it. We're very privileged to be able to do that. But actually, it's been really good to share that. We recently did a sort of stop and learn for other teams. And it was actually the executive teams talked about our challenges that we find working together, which was, as you said earlier on, just really good. If we believe this is the right thing for other teams and how they work, we need to also come to terms and work with this way. And I actually, you know, it convinces me the more I work with my team like this, how much potential there is in taking this developmental approach.
I think it's an absolute litmus test. I would have no faith in an organisation that was telling me it was moving towards TEAL or greater self-organisation without the executive team having been leading it and being able to demonstrate it from the beginning, because it's such a change, isn't it, that has to be walked and talked, not just talked.
That's right.
I must admit, I've been envious hearing how you've had opportunities to work with some of the key people described in the Deliberately Developmental Organisation book. What else have you done around that space as well as immunity to change?
It's interesting. I suppose I've been really interested because we primarily worked with Brian Ungard, with Decurion, and been very privileged to have him be a thinking partner and guide and resource our thinking. And he's really been helpful with us, taking us more into the regenerative organisations by Carol Sanford. And I'm finding it really useful to learn to be part of that and think about living systems. Now, I don't know, we might get a bit lost amongst this because I'm still finding it really hard to articulate and translate all the ideas that Carol Sanford has and develops in people. But we're really beginning to really appreciate how you think about organisations as living beings and being part of a greater world that's all alive and functioning in various ways. We actually used some of the thinking recently around a particular risk. I find risk management thinking kind of ends us down a rabbit hole.
Yes. Yes.
And it's like it's problem oriented. It's absolutely important because you've got to fix something, but it gets down to being quite a mechanistic approach to solving a problem. But to take it much more into thinking around more potential and more regenerative thinking about what the issue with as being part of a system, and then thinking it in terms of potential rather than problem solving, how energized we become, I become, and then how much more creativity comes with that energy to be able to address the issue and then come to a better place than what it does with risk management thinking.
That's a great example. So if you were asked what different approaches do you now take, thinking about risk differently, feels like a good example that the way you are developing and growing as a team is having a significant impact in how you address very practical, thorny issues like risk.
I can't grasp it completely, but I think the living systems and thinking about potential and how we learn to lead and inspire and manage organisations has got enormous potential versus some of the much more mechanistic approaches of risk management, project management and so on that I've been very taken with in the past.
And I also appreciate the humility of here's some new thinking and new ideas that are new to us that we want to deeply engage with and think about the implications for who we are and how we lead. And again, that feels a different stance that you don't often see in lots of executive teams from my limited experience anyway.
So it does feel a little scary. It is scary at times, but I also know some of the, you know, it's like that reflective practice, as you know that some of these other things don't work. So there's got to be a better way of doing things. So how do we challenge our thinking to think about how we develop organisations where people can thrive and grow and support our people that we work for to thrive and grow? And that's what's so wonderful about being working in this sector, is that our business is about supporting people to thrive and grow in their communities. And so is our organisations. That could be a really critical part of that. So we're very well placed in the sector to really do. It's got so much coherency and congruence. That's exciting for me.
Thank you for listening. I'd love to hear your reflections. Please tweet me. I'm at Helen@WBTeams. This podcast is a companion to Open Teams. On this podcast, we share the voices and stories of pioneering organizations in health, care, and public services. And on Open Teams, you can see the documents that they're using. Have a look at openteams.co.uk. And if you're interested in wellbeing teams, please come and find me on LinkedIn, where I share a weekly 2-minute film, or my blog site, HelenSanderson.net. And finally, if you're interested in self-management and need some support along the way, I'd love to hear from you. I'm at Helen@wellbeingteams.org. Thank you.